Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 13th of September. On many occasions on this program, we have talked about the economy in America. And as we have done so frequently, the subject of Germany enters the conversation and why it is that the German economy is doing so much better than ours. So the question of this hour is why? We attempt to answer that question, and here are some statistics. Inflation-adjusted average hourly pay has risen almost 30% since 1985 in Germany. In this country, hourly pay has risen 6% since 1985. Germany avoided a housing bubble. Its unemployment rate is 6.1%. Ours is 9.1%. Germany has improved its education system. The math scores of students there have gone up significantly in the past 10 years. With Germany's national average now higher than the average in the highest performing state in this country, Massachusetts. Germany does have strong labor unions. The disparity in income is not as great. The top 1% of German households earn about 11% of all income, and that hasn't changed since 1970. In the U.S., the top 1% makes more than 20% of all income, and that's up 9% in 1970. And of course, there's the matter of taxes, which we'll discuss. Germany, of course, is also part of a European Union, so we would be remiss if we didn't look at the decisions that the chancellor is making. She, according to news reports in the Times today, says that more than any other European politician will have to either summon the leadership to rescue the euro or concede that the political will is not there. Of course, she'll be looking at whether to allow Greece to default or even to leave the currency union. So we'll be discussing that. We have as our guest this hour Professor Abdur Chowdhury. He's professor and chair in the Department of Economics at Marquette University, recently returning to Marquette from Switzerland, where he was the chief economist of the United Nations Economic Commission in Europe for the past 5 years. He has taught in various places in the world, including Thailand, was a visiting professor with Johns Hopkins University, and a senior researcher with the Central Bank of Finland in 2002. He was appointed in 2010 to the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago's Academic Advisory Council, and he has published extensively in professional journals and various media outlets. Specialization, U.S. macroeconomy, international finance, and global economic issues. A perfect guest for purposes of our discussion. We'll be welcoming your phone calls. I'm so happy we're finally doing this show. I feel like we're going to learn all these things. It's good. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Professor Chowdhury, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on your program.
Yes, a great pleasure. Before we talk about why Germany is doing so well, let's look at the current news, and that concerns the German chancellor and how she will deal with a debt crisis in Europe, whether to allow Greece to default or leave the currency union. Tell me how Germany plays into all of this and why she is making these kinds of decisions.
One of the reasons is, as you know, Greece is in real financial trouble. Basically, they simply don't have the money to run the government. So what they have done is they are borrowing money from the European Union, from the European Central Bank, and from the IMF. Now, a big chunk of that money is coming from Germany. The German parliament, as well as the public opinion, is very much against, you know, bailing out other countries. So the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, she's having a hard time gathering support for sort of a bailout package for Greece. Even people in her party, the Christian Democratic Union, they are not supporting this bailout. So that's where she's having the problem.
And yet there is something for the benefit of all. There is a European Union, right?
Yes. Yes. There is a European Union, which is a part of what we call the Troika, who is trying to bail out the Greek economy. They have a couple of months ago, they had a bailout plan of 110 billion euro. And then last July, they decided to have a second bailout plan of about 109 billion euro. So a major chunk of that money will come from France and Germany. And as I said, the public opinion in Germany is very much against bailing out other euro nations.
Because Germany is doing so well, they don't want to lose any of what they have?
Yes, and basically, if you look at the public opinion in Germany, their view is that why should we pay for the mistakes that the government in Greece did, for example?
Do you imagine that that sentiment will prevail?
In my opinion, basically, the German parliament will pass the bailout package. Angela Merkel's party is very much in support of that, the leadership, although in the rank and file, they don't have that much support. But I think they will basically try to ram it through the parliament. They're supposed to have a vote later this month, and then there'll be two other votes in October and December for that bailout package. So I think at the end of the day, they will be able to come out with support for the package.
And if they do support the package, does Germany's economy falter at all? And if they don't support the package, does Germany's economy falter?
If they do support the package, no. Germany's economy will not falter. On the other hand, if they don't support the package, and say, for example, we have a disorderly default in Greece defaults, then that will have an adverse effect on euro, their currency, which will affect the German the German economy. One of the reasons Germany is so much interested is because a major portion of the loan that the Greek government has taken, they're from the French and the German banks. So if we have a disorderly default in Greece, that will adversely affect the German banks, which will have adverse effect on the German economy. So that's the concern that the German government has at this point.
I see. Well, let's talk about the strength of the German economy. I have read that Germany avoided a housing bubble some years ago. Is that one of the dominant reasons that its economy is much stronger than ours?
There are a couple of reasons, and that is one of that. If you look at the housing bubble, for example, just to give an example, in Germany at that time, in order to buy a home, you had to come up with 40% down payment, whereas in the U.S. we have much lower down payment ceiling. There are a couple of things I think Germany has done better than what we have done. And you mentioned some of that at the beginning when you were talking about the German economy. For example, if I summarize some of the things that you have said, one thing that we find is that the German government has been much more efficient. They have tried to reduce the incentive to retire early, for example. Okay, long-term unemployment is a serious problem today in the U.S. economy. But look at how they dealt with that problem in Germany. For what the German government did was they took a fresh look at people who had not worked for years, and they tried to determine who could and couldn't work. Those who were able to work, they were matched with potential employers. For example, just to give an example, if they took a low-paying job, for example, which was often the case, they would receive a portion of the unemployment benefit for the government. On the other hand, if they refused to work, then those benefits were reduced. Another thing that we found in Germany was the flexibility between the business and the employees. For example, the business and the employees, they agreed to change wages and the work week if needed, in order to respond to any unexpected drop in demand, for example. And that we saw happen in 2008 and 2009. Another thing that you mentioned, which I think basically worked for Germany, is their emphasis on the education system. And you talked about their math score, reading and science score. What they realized is that there is a strong connection between technical skills and the strong manufacturing sector. So they have tried to build up the technical skill in their population. Germany is basically an export-based economy at this point. Export is what is driving their economy. The export are mostly manufactured goods. And by developing the technical skill among its population, it has helped to increase that manufacturing base, which we don't see happening in the U.S. Another thing you referred to was regulation. and this is where the housing sector came in, we did see, for example, unlike in this country where we're seeing that, you know, labor unions are being decimated, in Germany we saw just the opposite. The labor unions are quite powerful, and what that has done is it has helped the middle class, as you pointed out in your opening statement, it has helped the middle class to maintain their income level. Taxes is another reason. If you look at the German budget deficit, it's much lower than the U.S., both in absolute and in as a percent of GDP. And one of the reasons their deficit is smaller is because they're willing to match the benefits that they provide with the needed tax. So, for example, currently there is a deficit reduction plan in front of the government. If you look at the deficit reduction plan, that includes about 60% spending cut and 40% increases in taxes in certain areas. So there are certain things that they have done which we haven't done here.
And is there a big debate about the increase in taxes as there is in this country or not?
No. In Germany, one of the reason is Germany is a welfare state, as you know, for a long time. So many of the benefits that they provide to the population, they're paid by taxes. So there hasn't been that much of an uproar there.
When you talk about their exports, can you put that in a global perspective? Are they doing well? They export a lot because there are certain countries on Earth, Brazil, China, India, and a couple others are doing well, and that's where all their goods go?
There are two areas. If you look at German exports, a good portion of their export goes to the emerging market, countries like China, India. They import a lot from Germany. And then the second thing is, if you look at the European Union, the countries in Europe, they do a lot of trading among themselves. Mm-hmm. So many of the countries in Europe basically import from Germany. And that's one of the problems I see within the European Union. If you look at the European Union, you see this north-south divide. You have countries in the northern Europe, like Germany, who are having this trade surplus through their exports. And then you have countries in southern Europe, like Portugal, Greece, Spain, who basically have a huge trade deficit. They're importing more than what they're exporting.
And what is it exactly that Germany is exporting? A lot of VWs?
A lot of manufactured products, yes. If you look at their export items, it's mostly manufactured products, big-ticket items. Cars, obviously, is one of them.
Are there things that we should learn in America that we could do fairly immediately that would put us more on par with Germany, or are we just such a different philosophy and political disagreement here that it would be impossible to emulate them?
No, I think there are a couple of things we can do in the short term that would help our economy. For example, I mentioned about the labor market issue. Long-term unemployment has been a serious problem for the U.S. economy. More than 4 million people in this country have been unemployed for more than a year, the duration of unemployment. So that is something I think we can learn from Germany. What they did, as I mentioned earlier, that they tried to match long-term unemployed workers with prospective employers. And the government sort of, in some cases, subsidized the employers who would provide jobs to the long-term unemployed. So that was one thing that helped the German economy to keep the unemployment rate around 6%, whereas in the U.S., for example, we have seen it rise to 9%.
So there was a need. This would indicate that those companies, those businesses, needed more employees, right, because their economy was doing well, they were selling things, et cetera.
Yes. They did have an increased demand for their products. And as I said, the increase in demand came mostly from the export sector. So the emerging markets were doing well, China, India, those economies were doing well, and they were buying a lot of products from Germany. And what Germany did was basically increased their production level to meet this increased demand from other countries.
Tell me the significance, Professor Chowdhury, of this income disparity. Top 1% in German households earning 11% of all income. In the U.S., top 1% making more than 20% of all income. What does that mean?
Historically, what we have seen in Germany, if you look at the numbers that you've just quoted, what that tells me is that income inequality has increased much more in the U.S. relative to Germany. What it means in terms of the middle class is that we see the middle class in the U.S. shrinking, whereas the middle class in Germany basically have stayed, as a proportion of the population, have stayed where it was a couple of decades ago. And one of the problem with that is the buying power, consumer demand. Okay, so we do see this high consumer demand from the middle class in Germany.
And I would imagine, considering what's happened with the lessening of the strength of unions in this country recently, that a lot of people in the middle class now will not have as much buying power?
Yes. Given the labor market conditions that we see, given what is happening in the housing market, I would say that would be the case.
We have a full line of phones ringing, ringing, ringing. Actually, they've been answered by Chrissy, so we'll get to them in just one moment. We were wondering, because we've done so many shows on what's going on with the U.S. economy, do we need to look at other countries to find out why they may be doing better? And the country that keeps coming up and coming up is Germany. And so we thought we would spend an hour, and I think it's a worthwhile hour, talking about why Germany is doing so well. Our guest this hour is Professor Abdur Chowdhury, professor and chair of the Department of Economics at Marquette University. He's been all over the world, recently returned from Switzerland, where he was the chief economist at the UN Economic Commission in Europe for the past 5 years. He has taught in Thailand, and he has been a senior researcher with the Central Bank of Finland. So he has a great deal of international knowledge and experience as well. As a matter of fact, one of his special areas is international finance and global economic issues. Here's our phone number. Our lines are filled right now, but you can send an email if you really want to get your question in soon, or you can just wait for a line to be open. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And the email is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, Jeff Charlotte, who's written one very interesting book, Sweet Heaven When I Die, Faith, Faithlessness, and the Country in Between. He is also the best-selling author of The Family and C Street. We interviewed him about The Family, and co-author of Killing the Buddha. He's a wonderful writer and comes up with some essays in this book that are things that you just never thought of, and they're important stories. All right, let's go to phone calls. We start our calls with Frank in Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Frank.
Fine guest. Great topic.
Thanks.
I'd like to ask the guest to perhaps comment on the different relationship that German banks have with middle-sized corporations. It's intimate, and they're supportive, more patient capital approach relative to the United States. And then, not to be too greedy, perhaps he could comment on German corporations furloughing and job-sharing policies rather than the dismissal of the workforce during downturns. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank. Interesting questions.
Sure. Thank you for the question. Yes, as I mentioned, the German banks, they have played a significant role in the economy. What they have done is, if you look at the last 3 years, the German banks have provided a significant amount of credit to the German corporations. And interestingly, a major portion of that credit went to small and medium enterprises, the SMEs. So that helped to keep those business firms in business. That was one thing they did. The second thing the second question basically refers to the flexibility that I talked about earlier, that the business and the employees in different corporations, they agreed to changes in wages in the work week if required, in order to respond to any unexpected change in demand. So we had that flexibility where, you know, if one business firm was having financial trouble, their employees were transferred to another business firm to work. So as a result, people were not unemployed, even though the firm that they were working was in financial trouble. So that helped to keep unemployment rate low.
And is this continuing now, or was that just a temporary situation?
No, some of this is continuing now. Some of this is continuing now.
Thank you, Frank, for the call. Laverne is next in Monroe. Hi, Laverne.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Great program.
Thanks.
Is Germany involved with credit derivative swaps, which is another name for derivatives, because derivatives have a lot of different names, and are they regulated?
Yes. A number of German banks are involved in credit default swaps. The regulation in Germany is higher than what we have seen in the U.S., in fact. The German and the French and the British government, they're trying to impose even strict regulations, banking regulations, and that has been there has been some debate in the last couple of days in Europe over banking regulation. But yes, a number of German banks have participated in the CDS.
Thanks, Laverne, for the call. Bill in Madison, hi.
Yes, thank you for this topic. There's been a lot of new books coming out on the market right now because of the silly season, you know, the election coming up in 2012. You know, socialism is the destroyer of worlds and the great Satan that destroys planets everywhere, you know, and they never mentioned Germany as a case study of how, to support their point of view. And I think the reason is because they maintain a middle class. They have laws that maintain unions that allow a middle-class wage, and so people have money in their pockets. And unusually, you have a socialized economy with a economy that produces high value-added, high technical goods that the world wants to buy, and so they have a strong export. Driven economy that doesn't depend on, like America, the refutilization, basically, of the American economy. I just wondered is there any way possible that American politicians, American right wing, or anybody can be made to see the light?
You have pointed to one of the things that I mentioned earlier, and which I think has created a positive impact in the German economy, is the unique role that the German government plays in a market economy. And here comes, you know, the regulation, the issue of regulation, that they have regulated the economy in such a way that the middle class was not decimated. Now, whether certain sections in this country can learn from that, I don't know.
Thanks for the call. Lest we think everything is going along just swimmingly in Germany, they must have some concerns about their economy, do they not?
Yes, they do. There are some concerns. And in fact, the concerns are more outside Germany than within Germany. And the main concern and problem I see in Germany is because of the export-driven nature of their economy, the German government has not given that much importance to raising domestic demand. And what is happening because of that is affecting other countries in the European Union. I mentioned about the trade deficit that the southern European countries are having at this point. Unless you see an increased demand for goods and services in Germany, German import from other European countries are not going to increase. And that's one of the problems, say, countries like Portugal, Spain, Greece are facing, that they're buying a lot of goods from Germany, but since they're not able to sell as much to Germany, so their trade deficit is increasing. So that's one of the problems I see in Germany, that the consumer demand is not increasing at the rate it should.
Bill, thanks for your call. Dan in Three Lakes. Hi.
Good morning. A couple of things. Correct me if I'm wrong, but folks, the German industry is highly unionized. Volkswagen and BMW in Germany are unionized, while the Volkswagen plants and BMW plants in the United States are not unionized. And the largest dollar value exporters of automobiles in the United States are those Volkswagen and BMW plants, more so than American cars. And they're run in the United States with non-union labor to avoid German taxes. I'll listen off the air.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
Yes. The German corporations and firms are highly unionized. Yes. And basically what that has done in Germany is that it's increased the clout of the union, both at individual companies and also in the political system. And that's one of the reasons I would say that the middle class there has fared decently in recent years in Germany.
An email from Gary, who hopes you will address three things, and I'm sure you will. He'd like for you to comment on Germany's comprehensive health insurance, which he says originated during the empire under Bismarck in the 1880s. He'd like you to comment on union members sitting on the boards of directors of the major corporations. And number three, the Federal Republic's defense budget, proportionally much smaller than that of the U.S.
Yes. If I take one at a time,
sure.
The first question deals with health insurance. Germany, as you know, is a welfare state, so they spend significant amount of money on health insurance, the German government. And that's one of the reasons you'll see they have increased taxes over the years to pay for that welfare benefits to workers. Union members do sit, unlike in the U.S., in Germany, and this is true in a number of other European countries where you'll see that union members are part of the board of directors in a business firm. The idea there is that since union is a part of the corporation, so having their voice in the working in the day-to-day operation or long-term operation of the corporation will have some benefit. So they work from that perspective.
And we go next to Daryl from Iowa. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning.
Hi.
My question is, does Germany pay for the costs of companies moving overseas like the United States does?
You're talking about outsourcing. The German companies don't do outsourcing as much as we do over here. There are some German companies that have outsourced or formed joint ventures with other countries and other corporations. But no, the German government do not subsidize their corporations.
Thanks, Daryl. We go to Gary in Merrill. Hi, Gary.
Yes, good morning. I think to the benefit of Germany, they did kick out our Communist Mart or Walmart. And in the United States, Walmart, if you want to sell them a product, they say come back when you make it overseas. And Germany didn't want to accept all the communist-made items. Thanks.
Germany has no Walmarts, Professor Chowdhury?
I'm not positive on that. I really don't know if Walmart has any stores in Germany. I really don't know.
Another email from Tom in River Falls. Germany is a wealthier country than its counterparts, Greece, Portugal, Spain, Italy, and Ireland, have weaker economies. It gives Germany a weak euro to bolster massive exports, while there is no tax burden for Germany to fund the weaker eurozone economies. It would be similar to New York not having to be taxed to fund programs in Mississippi. Brussels can't tax France or Germany to transfer wealth to Greece. Germany, as a result, gets the most vacation on Earth, has very robust unemployment benefits, and they don't spend 20% of GDP on health care like the U.S. If Germany was still on the mark and Greece was on the drachma, Greece would be doing better and Germany would be doing less well.
There are some people who believe in this view that, you know, the European Union to some extent has sort of subsidized the German prosperity that we have seen in recent years. On the other side of the coin, Germany also had to bear some of the costs of moving the European Union forward. So I think it worked on both sides. There were some costs as well as there were some benefits that Germany derived by joining in the European Union.
Let's go back to education for a moment, Professor Chaudhary. Are we understating how important it may be to the economy to make sure that there is education in math and science for the jobs that are on the market? We keep hearing in America that there are a lot of jobs available for engineers, for people who have technical skills, and employers are just crying for a specific kind of employee that we haven't educated. How important is that to Germany's economic success, and how exactly have they educated their students to meet the demands of the workplace?
I would say it is extremely important, not only for Germany, for any country, to have a strong education base, because there is a strong connection between the technical skills of the population and, say, for example, the manufacturing sector, which, you know, drives economies like Germany or, let's say, other developed countries. And so Germany has realized that if they want to prosper over the years, they have to have a strong education system. And unfortunately, this is where I think we are falling behind. If you look at the U.S., if you look at what has happened in Wisconsin, or if you look at what has happened in a number of other states, instead of basically encouraging education system, we have cut government funding to education. We have basically discouraged education in every different possible way. Unless we put more emphasis on education, unless we try to teach our students, you know, the technical skills that they need, we will have problems down the road, because we are now living in a globalized economy and other countries are emphasizing education. If we don't, then we will fall behind in the coming years.
Ken in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for this program.
You're welcome.
I'm an executive and technical recruiter, and I'm wondering, how has Germany, both in their industry and government, dealt with people who are long-term underemployed, who are older? What has been the policies on both sides as far as age discrimination? Because this is an unspoken problem that we have here.
Yes. The same problem exists in Germany, where they did have a large number of long-term unemployed in the labor force. So what they have tried to do is they basically looked at people who have been unemployed for a long time. They tried to determine who could and couldn't work. If those who were able to work, they were matched with potential employers. For example, if they took a low-paying job, which was often the case, then they would receive a small portion of the unemployment benefit that was coming from the government. If they refused to work, that benefits were reduced. So what they did was they provided incentives to take up work, and that, I think, helped. Many unemployed people who were unemployed for a long time, and, you know, for example, people who were of advanced age in the labor force, they used this opportunity to come back to the labor force. And also another thing that the government did there was they introduced a lot of retraining programs, which helped the older population in the labor force.
So was it all carrot and no stick?
No. The stick was, as I said, that if you refuse to work, then you wouldn't get any benefits from the government.
Well,
if
I mean,
if you were able to work and then you refused, the government would not continue to provide you with unemployment benefits.
Well, what I mean is from the industry side. I understand that that industry was encouraged and given these incentives to hire.
Yeah,
what happened
no,
if they did not?
There were no sticks as such for the industries as such that you know, they were encouraged to hire. But I haven't seen any cases or read of any cases where industries were penalized. I haven't read of any cases like that.
And it wasn't needed then, as far as you can tell?
I would say it wasn't needed, maybe. Yeah, because of the flexibility that we saw in the German labor relationship.
Very interesting. There's a lot we can learn from that, too.
Yes.
Thanks, Ken. Yeah. We have, for the first time this hour, a couple lines open if you'd like to join the conversation. We're looking at why the German economy is so strong. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour number two of our program, Jeff Charlotte will be joining us. He has a new book, Sweet Heaven When I Die, Faith, Faithlessness, and the Country in Between. It's a country of prophets, promoters, revolutionaries, and other restless souls who will guide him along the way. A series of 13 extraordinarily interesting and beautifully written essays. Our number is 800-486-8655, and our guest is Professor Abdur Chowdhury. He's professor and chair in the Department of Economics at Marquette University and has just returned to Marquette after 5 years in Switzerland, where he was the chief economist of the UN Economic Commission. He has worked in a variety of capacities all over the world. Maureen and DePere, our next caller. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
My comment is, we just came back from Germany. We were there for 2 weeks, and we were actually staying with a banker, and we had this discussion about Walmart.
Oh.
And he told us that 44 Walmarts were kicked out of Germany, and one of the reasons was they didn't have good employment policies. They were given a chance to change, and they refused, and so they were asked to leave. And he said it's because most German corporations are asked to pay a living wage, and the German government did not believe that they were paying an adequate wage, and I guess they didn't want to subsidize Walmart. So they were asked to leave, and they did. So I would like to learn more about it, and I hope the professor, you know, would be interested enough to get a case study going on it, because that's pretty significant.
Oh, I'm sure that he will. That's fascinating, isn't it, Professor Chowdhury?
Yeah, it is fascinating, and this basically ties into what we were discussing earlier, that that the government basically gives a lot of attention and a lot of importance to labor relations and the welfare of the working population.
Thank you, Maureen, very much for your information. I'm glad you were there and gave us up-to-the-moment information on this. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
bye.
Thank you.
Here's something from Lee in Milwaukee. I lived in Germany. It had a huge, or a large, he said, guest worker population. Is that still true? And do these employment programs that we've been talking about apply to them? And how does their unemployment rate compare to the 6% rate?
Germany, because of being a part of the European Union, one thing they have is free flow of worker within the European Union. And so Germany gets a lot of workers from other countries. Say you'll see a lot of workers from Spain, Portugal, in Germany. There are a lot of Turkish workers. They have historically been in Germany for a long time. So we do see a lot of immigrant workers working in Germany. Now, the workers that come from the European Union countries, they would basically gain the same get the same benefits as a German worker. In case of the Turkish workers, it's a little bit different. There has been cases where the Turkish workers were not provided adequate wages, for example. But with, as I said, with workers from other countries in the European Union, the wages were very similar.
And what was the problem with the Turkish workers?
Because the Turkish workers didn't come from Turkey is not a part of the European Union yet.
Oh.
So as a result, they are not covered by European Union laws.
Hmm.
So we did see cases where, you know, Turkish workers were exploited. So that did happen. Not only for Turkish workers, but it also happened, for example, for Polish workers before Poland joined the European Union.
I see. Gary in northern Wisconsin, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to point out one thing that the guest did mentioned that Germany was a welfare state, but a caller from Milwaukee, I think, referred to them as a socialistic state, and that needs to be corrected. They are not a socialistic state. Socialism, I think, pertains to government ownership of the means of production, and in this country, for instance, our military is our greatest socialistic enterprise, since the military is our means of producing either warfare or peace. And I think that's a significant point that he should emphasize the distinction between welfareism and socialism.
Yes, Germany is a welfare state like many other states in Europe.
An email that's come in from Tammy in Green Bay. Does Germany have immigration controls, unlike the U.S., where we have open borders and reward non-citizens with free health care, housing, food stamps, etc.? I believe this is a huge factor in the U.S. economy and lack of recovery.
As I mentioned earlier, one of the things that happened after the European Union was formed was that there was a free flow of individuals within the Union. So Germany does get a lot of citizens from other European Union countries who might want to come to Germany and work legally. So they do have a large population coming to that country.
Art in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
So I originally was going to ask a bit about China, but this last comment, I should just share that my son from Milwaukee is an immigrant worker in Berlin, Germany.
Oh, really?
He was laid off. He's an architect. And the German government gave him a subsidy to help set up his own small business of over $10,000. So Germany, in some cases, is very generous to its immigrant workers.
Oh, isn't that interesting? When did that happen, Art?
Well, I think the subsidy's over in the last couple of years.
Uh-huh. And he's
You know, he got so much a month for, I think, over a year.
Huh. Is he doing well?
He's doing well. He's married to a German lawyer, so he's got a civil servant income in the family as well.
Hmm.
But aside from that, my reading of the German economy in a couple of years ago, at least, was that a really major factor was the fact that in China, when the rest of the world was going through on the verge of depression, they had not only their normal increase in the growth of their economy, but they had a massive stimulus and very successful stimulus program, and that they were buying huge amounts of material from Germany, whole factories and precision machinery, et cetera, for manufacturing, and that was a really major factor in why the German export market was so successful. So I'm wondering if that's still true and if the professor thinks that was actually true a year or two ago.
Yes, I mentioned about that earlier, and it is true. Germany is an export-driven economy, and a major portion of the demand for German export comes from the emerging markets like China, like India. Since the emerging markets are growing, so they have increased demand for manufactured products, for example, machines, for example. So Germany has been a significant seller of those products to emerging markets, which in turn helped the German economy.
Thank you, Art, for the call. In Pleasant Prairie, Jim. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for an opportunity to compare ourselves, a rare opportunity, to a country that at least in some respects seems to be doing better than we are. I wanted to revisit briefly the subject of education because, you know, it's a consensus that we do well on the on the higher education level in college, but where we're falling behind a lot of other countries is the vital and huge gap of K through high school or K through 12, and have followed these political patching up, which has been going on as recently as the last few days, coming from Washington, looking for quick fix solutions. Whereas a public education, of course, is a much more long range investment with a slower return. One of the big differences, I believe, has absolutely nothing to do with government, in the sense that in places like Germany, consistently, the parents are much more engaged in the educational process of their children.
Yes, I agree with the caller. Education has been one of the major positive features in the German economy, and he is right. In the U.S., in the postgraduate education, we are ahead of many other countries, many other developed countries. One of the reasons for that is we spend a lot more money on research-related education. But at the primary and secondary level, that's where we are gradually falling behind many other countries around the world.
And have we talked about affording higher education, tuition, and costs? One of our emails from Gordon said that it's very hard to save for and afford higher education in the United States. How do Germans afford higher education? How does the government help with low-interest loans or other programs?
In Germany, the government does subsidize higher education. Tuition, for example, in German universities are not as high as what we see over here. There are loans that are provided to students. So they get more subsidies for higher education in Germany than we do over here. And also, the cost of higher education is much lower over there compared to what we see here.
We go next to Pete in La Crosse. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Kathleen and guest. I wanted to point out that the adoption of renewable energy, both solar thermal and wind energy, but also photovoltaic, is very high in Germany. And in fact, if the magazines I read are to be believed, something like 35% of all the photovoltaic panels installed in 2010 were installed in Germany. And I don't want to claim that that is what's led to their economic success, but contrary to the naysayers in this country, renewable energy does not have to be a drag on the economy. I'm looking for the professor's comments.
Yes, and that I have seen, having been there for a number of years, I have seen that not only in Germany, but in, for example, a number of Scandinavian countries where renewable energy has been used extensively. And the European Union as a whole have tried to encourage its member states to sort of use more and more renewable energy. So we see that trend in Europe in general.
We were going to follow up on this. One of our guests yesterday was talking about the companies in the United States making solar panels, and a significant number of them have closed recently because the business is being done by China.
That's not only in the solar panel industry, that we have seen in a number of other sectors in the economy where, you know, because of lower labor cost, many businesses have moved to China, to India, to Vietnam in recent years. So we have seen that happen.
We go next. Thanks, Pete, for the call from Milwaukee. Olayinka, how do you pronounce your name, sir?
Olayinka.
Olayinka, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity. I just would like a professor to perhaps educate me. Why is it so difficult for American companies to go overseas? I studied here, got a master's from UWM, and was in Nigeria for 25 years, only to come back last year looking for a business partner. I would tell you right now that both Germany and China, they are so much in Africa. Africa is the largest, right now, emerging economy in the world, and the huge opportunities are found there. But it's so difficult to get an American company to even begin to explore the possibilities of going to Africa. Well, the American government, through the U.S. Commerce Department, I'm talking about OPIC, Overseas Private Investment Corporation, is even willing to guarantee 60% of the total exposure of any American company trying to go overseas. We visited over 10 companies. I'm talking about construction companies here since 2010. So no success. Can somebody educate me how you can convince an American company to go overseas, please? Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Yes, the caller mentioned about China. China has invested billions of dollars in Africa. In fact, if you look at the foreign investment in Africa, a major chunk of that is coming from China. So United States, on the other hand, has not looked at Africa. Most of the U.S. companies that has gone overseas, mostly they have gone to the Asian countries, China, for example, a number of other Asian countries, and some of them have gone to Latin America and South America. But Africa, we haven't gone there much.
And thanks very much for the call. Oh, well, I hate to say goodbye to you. I'm glad you're back here. You can be our resident economist. I've learned so much this hour, and I feel like we've just scratched the surface of all you know about other economies. Thank you very, very much for all your wisdom.
Thank you very much for having me on your program. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Good. We did, too. Didn't we learn a lot this hour? He was a good guest. Professor Abdur Chowdhury, he is professor and chair of the Department of Economics at Marquette University. We'll have him on again. I'm so glad we did a show on this. It's been in the back of our minds. We have to do a show on Germany. We have to do a show on Germany to find out why they are doing so much better than we are. And I think we discovered some of the answers, at least during the course of this hour. He just got back from Switzerland, back to Milwaukee, where he was the chief economist of the UN Economic Commission in Europe for the past 5 years. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy as well for on-air production. Thanks for all of your great phone calls. The hour moved along, and I think we got to many of your calls. We'll have news coming up shortly and then a fascinating hour ahead, so stay with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.